sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
6-5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Text line works best for me if you want to get in touch with the program. Please use the text line. Still to come, April Marie Fogle, News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. And in the 11 o'clock hour, our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. So stay tuned for that. But joining us now, we talk to him from time to time, but always a pleasure to bring on C.J. Pearson, now at the University of Alabama. CJ, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Thanks so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for coming on. We'll kick it off here. A big night last night, I guess, for the Matt Walsh event. You saw it. I'm familiar with the Matt Walsh phenomenon and all that, but I was more curious to see how the students, particularly some of your left of center students at the University of Alabama, reacted to it. About as we had imagined, the freak show that ensued.
Yeah, it was insanity run amok. It was quite interesting. You know, I actually, you know, what's interesting, and I serve in student government as Speaker of the Senate, and so we actually approved the funding allocation for the Matt Walsh event, which a lot of people, a lot of those same individuals who were protesting, were very, very upset about. But, you know, as I made the argument, it's not our job to regulate speech on campus. It's our job to support free speech and the dialogue between different ideas. And so, you know, last night, I went out to the protest, and it was very interesting because I just wanted to ask them a few questions. I asked, like, do you believe that, you know, Matt Walsh is a homophobe? And if so, give me one example of him being homophobic. They couldn't do it. Asked them to give me one example of him being transphobic. They couldn't do it. And then asked one student, does he believe that five-year-olds should be able to have sex changes? He said, yes, if they know enough. Now, I don't know what you knew when you were five, Jeff, but I don't know if I would trust five-year-old me with that decision.
Well, here's what I think. I think these people, and I get it. I mean, I was that age. You want to fight the man or whatever, but they're just looking for something to protest, right? I mean, does it seem that way to you at times?
It was very much that. You know, the questions that I asked them, it just really showed a lack of awareness of what they're actually protesting. One time, at one point in the conversation, the guy said, I asked, you know, why do you think that Matt Walsh is a bigot? And he said he literally founded Turning Point USA. As we know, Matt Walsh did not found Turning Point USA. That's Charlie Kirk's organization, right? So, you know, I think a part of it is just they just want to be out there. They want to scream and shout, and I get it. But at the end of the day, one thing that was really curious to me is why don't they actually go to the event and engage in the Q&A? There was a Q&A after the screening of the documentary, but I think for some reason they would rather scream and shout on the quad than actually go and, you know, hold Matt Walsh's feet to the fire. They believe that's what's right.
Well, what do you think this, though, that how much of this quote-unquote activism or whatever, is it just a culture? There's no question. The faculty at universities has always been left of center, but I think it's gone even more. The goalposts keep moving, and so does the faculty. How much of this is really kind of the culture at Alabama now? Because it seems like it's much different than the times I've spent down there when I was in college age.
Yeah, so within the student body, you know, we still have a pretty largely conservative student body, especially within Greek life and things like that, which has helped. But, you know, to your point, in terms of academia, no university has been isolated from what we've seen as just the left's complete takeover of higher ed. There are many, classes, especially courses like the women's studies courses and things like that, I think where students definitely get a very slanted view of reality. You know, I always joke around with people. I learn more about the 54 other genders than actual women. And when I took women's studies freshman year, which is concerning, but I think the big thing here is that I think it's actually more driven by social media. I think that we live in such a culture today that glorifies victimhood, that glorifies just screaming and shouting and not knowing what you're talking about rather than working towards a solution. And so I think a lot of people in my generation, unfortunately, have taken up that same agenda. They'd rather hold up a sign just to say they did it, rather than actually work to advance solutions to the causes that they supposedly claim to care about.
Well, and tell me this, CJ. I mean, you come from a unique perspective. Before you hit the ground at the University of Alabama, you were somewhat familiar with the whole conservative movement and what that was about. And then you get to Alabama, and I don't know what your anticipations were, but does it seem like? It seems like it's a struggle to get stuff like the YAF and other, you know, movement conservative causes any steam at these schools. At least that's been my experience, generally speaking. But what's that been like for you?
You know, again, I think University of Alabama is a predominantly conservative campus. I think there's been a lot of leeway for these events. You know, we've had Charlie Kirk, we've had, you know, Matt Walsh come, we had Senator Ted Cruz last semester as well. But I think there is a very loud minority of students who are very good at making a ruckus and oftentimes making themselves seem as if they are more plentiful than they actually are, right? And I think that the biggest thing about that is that sometimes that's scary for a lot of conservative students, people that I personally know, who have kind of been pushed into this world of being apolitical just so they can say, oh, like, I'm not really conservative. You can't call me a racist. You can't call me a homophobe. And that actually has a lot more to do with cancel culture as a whole than I think our university culture necessarily. But what I would say, you know, again, like speaking on my experience within the Student Government Association, serving as speaker, literally, you know, when it became on our docket to approve the funding for this Matt Walsh event, as we approve funding for every other club organization on campus, you know, if they're having an event, you know, they make a request to the SGA and we approve that, you know, if they fulfill the requirements, if they have a bank account, if they, you know, are properly registered with the university. It was insane how many people just came and said, we shouldn't allow people like this on our campus. And it's like, people who believe there are two genders, people are conservative. And I think like that's the worry for me is not necessarily that the university is, you know, anti-free speech or even most students are, but because I think that there is a lot of fear among some to not be canceled that is very easy to give in to some of those people who make those arguments that if you support this, then you also are transphobic or homophobic or any of those things.
What about the Student Government Association? Now that's always been, I don't know if it's necessarily ideological, but you know, the knock on Alabama, and you're talking to a guy with Auburn. When you talked about student government, it was just like machine politics and all Greek, and they ran the student politics on campus. But it sounds like there's at least an element within student government that is just kind of whacked out, left of center, fight against a man sort of, I don't know, part of it. What's that culture like?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of, you know, people with a lot of diverse views within student government. You know, I'm obviously very open about my conservative beliefs. I have, you know, friends within the organization who are very much on the opposite side of the aisle. But one thing that I think, fortunately, maybe something that Congress could learn from is that at the end of the day, I think what we're looking to do is just kind of address problems and find solutions, right? So thank God, you know, we're not having, you know, these super partisan debates about things like abortion or the minimum wage. You know, we're talking about, you know, how do we address really common sense problems with common sense solutions, right? And so that's been really good for that. But I think, you know, obviously everyone has their own, you know, beliefs and points of view. But I think, honestly, for our organization, it was really beneficial to see how we've been able to work through those partisan differences and just serve the people that we were elected to serve.
Yeah, because it's just, you know, parking and the funding for the whatever the charity event may be for whatever
we're not raising the debt ceiling. Yeah. Right. It's a lot less controversial. Yeah.
And you don't have like big midterm election coming up, so you don't have to position or any of that. I mean, but when it does get introduced, when you do have do you ever have it the other way around? Do you ever see this where conservatives get upset about something and they protest, you know, so during the, during this last election cycle, CJ, for whatever reason, the Mike Durant guys were shopping Oppo about Katie Britt's time as SGA president. And going back to the old Crimson Whites, looking back, I mean, you actually had conservatives that were against the so-called morning after pill, or if it was whatever it was called, but that they rallied and they took a stand on something that was, you know, a hot charge, hot button issue. Do you ever see that from the right on things around campus?
You know, no. And that's what's so interesting is that, you know, for the left to always claim that they're the side of inclusivity and tolerance, they seemingly forget that every single time they get upset. But I've never seen that from conservatives. I've never seen us protesting liberal speakers that come on campus. Many of them have. You know, do we think it's silly? Do we think it's dumb? Yeah, but we're not out here tweeting about it. We're not out here protesting about it. There are simply better things to do on a Thursday night than be on the quad holding up a sign, right? So I think like that is just one of those things where it just goes to show, and I say this often, is that the left proves every single day that they are everything that they say conservatives are. They're the intolerant people. They're the people who can't, you know, be around different ideas and beliefs. And it's frankly, it's saddening and it's disheartening, because we deserve to live in a country, especially in terms of higher education, where people can have different ideas and actually have a dialogue about those ideas. But unfortunately, what it seems to be the case is that whenever you utter those different ideas, you want to be called a racist, you want to be called this and that. And it's funny that you mentioned the Crimson White, because I remember when I was running for re-election for Senate, for SGA, they wrote an article claiming that my re-election would be the most damaging thing to the historically marginalized communities on our campus. Now, Jeff, I'm Black, so that was very curious to see. That apparently I am now a racist. And it was interesting, even more so, the author of that piece was a white liberal. So I think it just goes to show that, like, they really truly do live in a world that is far too often just make believe.
Well, it sounds like some conservatives kind of get tired of that. You know, we had a story at 1819 News about a conservative media outlet is coming to be at the Crimson White. I mean, look, I was an editor of a college newspaper. I get it. The culture is very liberal because people go into journalism and they want to do positive for society. They want to do social work, and that tends to be left of center. Yeah. But it's way different. The Crimson White and a little bit with the Plainsmen, because I read these things, I consume all these, you know, just, but they're exactly what you're talking about here, where while the SGA is focused on these sort of campus specific issues, they really are thinking like globally and left of center and you know, their own, whatever their own definition of tolerance or whatever is.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly that. And, you know, what's interesting about that piece that I just mentioned, in which they called me a racist, one of the examples that they use, or pieces of evidence they used to cite my so-called racism, was a picture that I had with Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know, as if that was an indication that I've endorsed every single belief that she's ever uttered. And also, too, just let's address the absurdity of the fact that here you have a white liberal author who, by the way, is the vice president of some club called the Leftist Collective on campus, calling a Black man a white supremacist, essentially. And I think, like, that's the most interesting thing in the world, especially when you have what I saw last night. You have people saying that conservatives are bigots. Matt Walsh is a bigot. Aren't you a bigot for saying that people who have conservative beliefs or just had to take pictures with congressmen and senators are now somehow just should be shunned and pushed into the shadows of society because we don't deserve to even exist? You know, it's absolutely insane. And again, it's saddening.
A couple more minutes here, CJ, before I let you go. But you got a sizable following on Twitter. What do you make of the Elon Musk news?
I love it. You know, I love it. I think, you know, what we see with Elon Musk, not just buying Twitter, owning it, as far as yesterday goes, but immediately deciding to fire all of the top executives and clean house, is what I wish we could do with the federal government, but unfortunately we can't. And we've already seen, you know, a big difference. And I read a story today. He actually plans to assume the role of CEO. Like, this isn't going to be a passive investment for him. Like, he wants to clean up Twitter. He wants to end the shadow banning. He wants to end the censorship. And it seems as if he may be welcoming President Trump back to Twitter. So it'll be pretty exciting to see how that goes.
Yeah, well, we'll see if Trump gets on. The true social thing, I mean, you know, the state of social media now in general, it was just getting started when I was coming up through college. But now it's, I don't know. I'm so wedded to Twitter and how it works, and even with all of its biases and stuff. But I do wonder if it's gonna look the same a year from now, or if it's gonna be something completely different.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's definitely gonna be. I think it's gonna be different. I think that's a good thing. I think we need to get rid of these, you know, kind of. In a sense, these deep state penetrators who work at Twitter, who have just done everything they can to censor different ideas, whether or not it's just sharing the idea that they're two genders or anything like that. I think that's an absurdity. But also, too, like to your point about True Social, all these other apps, you know, one thing I've always said is that I really love what they're doing and I love their intentions. But I think that creating a solely political social media app is just not destined to work. Because I think the same way that people, people use Twitter not just to talk about politics, they use it to talk about sports, their day, their dogs, tweet funny little cat memes. And that's not happening on True Social. That's not happening on Getter. That's not happening on any of those apps, because people are there because they want to talk about politics. But at the end of the day, I don't want to be surrounded by politics every single day. It's why I have Instagram. It's why I unfortunately have TikTok, which is the biggest strain on my day ever. But, people want a little bit of a break from the constant drain of the news cycle. So I think Twitter offers that. So I'm glad to see that it's in good and capable hands these days.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to see what's going to happen there. Hey, CJ, speaking of Twitter, folks want to follow you on there, check you out. Tell them how to do so.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you can check me out on Twitter at @TheCJPearson on there. And then you can look me up on any other social media with my name, CJ Pearson. Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for coming on. CJ Pearson, ladies and gentlemen. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.